Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's shit. Let's go hook him up!
About it.
I knew she was going to cut a promo on me. That's why I sent the question in.
Okay, well, you like stuff.
I was actually disappointed.
I don't care much for people talking about me. That's why I don't do stuff like that.
Mm. Well, if you weren't such an asshole, people wouldn't talk bad about you.
Well, I'm not an asshole. You're the only one talking bad about me.
Yeah, you're probably right about that, but anyway. We are going to be joined by Lance Storm. Hopefully, he actually told me he wasn't feeling all that great, but he said he would call in at about 8:30, so we're going to have to amuse ourselves for about 27 minutes here.
He's so, going to be like Sid. He's no-showing us again.
Ooh.
Right?
Yeah, and then when you go all crazy on him like you did Gabe?
No, because he gave me advance warning.
Oh, I see. All right, that's fair.
Now, if he would have just no-showed, not called, not said anything, then I would have had to cut a worse promo on him and Randy cut on me. But anyway, let's talk about something. I really don't even know what the hell we should talk about.
Get Craig some stuff. I don't know about it. Did you get it,
talk
Craig?
About something. Yeah, I got a little bit of news here.
It was a little bit of stuff I had to put together at the last minute to do it on my phone, so it's not much. But
yeah, I actually wanted to talk to Lance about this whole Scott Steiner thing. I think he would be a good authority figure on this.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to wait and talk about that with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll just tease it. For those of you that don't know, in some news this week, Scott Steiner is suing TNA, and he claims Jeff Hardy was intoxicated or possibly under the influence of drugs, which led to him having an injury, him being Scott Steiner. Yeah, I kind of wanted to see what Lance had to say about this whole thing.
So do we want to just wait for all of our opinions till Lance is on, or do we want to talk about it now?
Let's wait till Lance is on.
Okay, because I did have a few things to say. I'm sure Lance will totally disagree with everything I would say, but,
Well, that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, that is a good topic, though. But
Yeah, yeah. And other news, JBL has signed on to do color commentary for the WWE, and he's going to be staying for a while. I think it's a good addition.
I think it's on the SmackDown. It's Lois on Back Monday, so it's just on SmackDown. Maybe pay-per-views. I think he'll probably be on pay-per-views too. So.
Yeah, it's just too bad that it's a show that the three of us always kind of have seemed to miss because it's on while we're doing the show. And
right.
Well, I usually read the results from the spoilers and don't tune in anyway, so I'm not missing nothing.
Yeah, I pretty much read the spoilers as soon as they pop up.
Yeah,
the only reason I've been watching TNA lately is because of the whole thing being live, to be honest.
Right. Yeah, that surprise factor on Impact is something that I really like. They haven't done
anything. That's what I like on any wrestling show. Like back in the day, when we were younger, it was like every week was a surprise, but we didn't know anything. It would take 2 months to get the Pro Wrestling Illustrated for 2-month-old news. We didn't know when nobody left. They just wasn't on for a while. And you read the magazine, and they showed up someplace else.
This is like totally off topic, but I just was thinking about it. I picked up the WWE 13 video game, and just want to throw it out there. It's one of the most enjoyable and fun video games I've ever played.
I've never been much into the wrestling video games.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I've just never really been that much into them.
I remember back in the day I had the one where they had like magical powers. Or like Sean with like a bat would appear and he could do a bat, or the Undertaker could throw bats at you. And
I remember that one. Yeah. I've actually had most of them, but this one's really good. The Attitude Era thing is so much fun, and it brings back such great memories.
Especially when you watch today, huh?
Yeah, that's true. So if you're looking to pick up the game, Brian's running a contest, so learn how to sing a song and win that sucker.
I'm going to win it. I don't know what platform it's on. It's on the box.
I have no idea. I haven't been over there in a while either. So.
And he said if you win, you can just put it on eBay. Like, you got to do work to get this gift.
The thing is, I guarantee you, he had it in his, he had the package on his desk or in his hand, and he was just too realize what game it was, even with the name staring at him.
But there's a lot of green in the next box.
Yeah,
so
he wouldn't know that. He would not know that.
I think, actually, the person that did all the storylines on that video game is Paul Heyman. Came up with a lot of stuff on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For sure. The only thing go for real.
That's probably why it's so darn good. Anyway, sorry to derail the show, but I've been playing the heck out of it. And my wife went and bought me the special Stone Cold edition, so it's pretty neat.
Did you see that that promo interview that Punk and Austin did? The thing was awesome.
Yeah.
Made me want to see him wrestle.
Yeah, no doubt. Who knows? They might be able to put something together. It's hard to say.
I'd like to say that.
Absolutely. Anyway, in other news, TNA has a pay-per-view this weekend. And this one should be interesting.
Does this really qualify for news? I mean, I know you're a short press for time, but...
Well, we always do pay-per-view previews every right for pay-per-views, don't we?
Yeah, that absolutely is true. But honestly, I mean, that's like it's weird because I really don't watch. I never really watch it that much. Mainly know what's going on through the Brian and Vinny shows, and for some reason, I just have even less memory than I normally have of the show. So
that's because you're a stoner.
Well, I watch it, and I want to give my opinions on these matches that will be happening.
Anyway, the first match up on the pay-per-view. The first one listed is interesting because I don't know if one of the participants is actually going to be there.
Okay.
We have ODB and Eric Young, and they're facing Tara and Jesse.
Eric Young is making noise like he's leaving or something. Did you see the stuff in the Observer this week? And people jealous of his Animal Planet show? Because it'd be so much better than like some of the Bischoffs from Jason Harvey's reality shows.
Huh.
And then it got a lot of viewers. And so then TNA said, well, you know, maybe, I don't know why they didn't think about this star. Maybe we should get with Animal Planet and see if we can promote it. And
right.
Animal Planet wasn't interested. So.
And I'm wildly.
This might be his last match possibly for TNA. I mean, they basically, he wins the tag titles, he gets married, and he's around for a couple weeks, and then boom, he's like gone for like maybe one appearance in with the last 2 months, 3 months.
Those tag titles are like the Western States Heritage belts. They're out there, but they don't know nothing's ever done with them.
Yeah.
He already left once and then they re-signed him. I don't know.
Well, in storyline, apparently he's still looking for fried chicken.
I like him. He's funny.
Yeah. And Tara and Jesse are wildly entertaining. I don't know why. I should hate them, but they're... I don't know. I don't know what it is, but that's a great team.
Yeah.
We have Joseph Park versus Doc, who is the director of Chaos, who is Luke Gallows.
I thought it was Doc Jeezer for a minute. But at least they gave him a name this week, unlike last week, and supposedly they're just saying that it's him, but didn't identify him.
We have Rob Van Dam versus Joey Ryan for the X title. I bet you this is going to be no good. And
like Joey Ryan for some reason. I don't know. The whole sleaze thing is kind of true. He just looks like a sleaze ball. I don't watch him.
And he's such a nice dude. He's such a nice guy. We had lunch with him when we were in Phoenix. And he actually went to the Dragon Gate show, even though he was working for ROH. And really nice dude and totally, you know, opposite of his character. But anyway, that's...
And note that Phil, when somebody goes through the Dasher boards pretty well, so...
Yeah.
When he did that when Mark Henry put Sheamus through it at SummerSlam one year, last year or something.
That was pretty
awesome. Oh, yeah, that was awesome when he fucking went crazy. That was great.
This one, I'm actually really wanting to see Kurt Angle versus D-Von.
Okay.
I think this is when Briscoe is going to turn.
Yeah, that's probably a good call.
Or maybe Garrett Bischoff, because, you know, he and D-Von were a team before, so.
Or maybe both of them.
Yeah, maybe both of them. I mean, they can have these guys be, like, revealed, and it's not, like, that big of a deal because you still got, like, the big head of the whole group to come, so.
By the way, when did the NWO DVD come out?
This past week.
Huh. They've been promoting it like crazy on Raw, and I just haven't seen it?
I saw a couple of things on it on Raw. I think so.
I was just in the Best Buy today, and I noticed it was there and picked it up and looked at it and put it back on the shelf. Anyway.
they show commercials, but they never mentioned it on the show.
Interesting.
Did you watch that CM Punk documentary?
Oh, yeah. I love that. It's so good. It is so good. It's a really good DVD. Run out and get that or wait for it. I don't know.
It'll pop up on Netflix or something.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm glad I bought it. I'll watch it again. Just spent a lot of time talking about his upbringing or lack thereof, I should say. talked about his family dynamic and how he doesn't, you know, hasn't talked to his brother in like 12 years and just... you know, kind of a troubled kid, watched his dad you know, get drunk and pass out. He said he wouldn't have anything to do with that. And anyway, it's good stuff. It's real good.
They have a lot of, like, independent footage on there?
Like, yeah, it shows a lot of the IWA Mid-South. It has him and Chris Hero talking about their last match in that building, and how they seriously wanted to tear the building down as they were leaving, and trying to break the building and putting each other through walls and stuff.
I wasn't aware that I'd update me in South Rain and buildings.
It was like a barn, basically.
Okay.
A barn?
Yeah, that's what he called it. He referred to it as the barn.
Things that, like a video of IWM itself has always been outside.
Mm-hmm. I was disappointed that...
Was Prazak doing the commentary?
No, that's what I was just going to say. I was so disappointed that Prazak wasn't on the DVD at all. I think I might have saw the back of his head one time in his ponytail.
I thought he was supposed to be on the DVD.
I didn't see him.
Wow.
And I didn't fall asleep.
That's very
anyway. Weird. Yeah. Getting back to our TNA turning point. Samoa Joe versus Magnus, no DQ match. They've been having some good battles as of late.
I predict a title change here.
Okay. We have Chavo Guerrero, Hernandez versus Chris Daniels and Kazarian for the tag team titles. I like this match.
I think they should get the belts back.
You know, the pay-per-view is Sunday. Okay, the pay-per-view is Sunday. Okay, obviously, since we're talking about it. But you know what's going on tonight? Hernandez is actually, because I got a text from Brandon yesterday, they're having some kind of, like, fucking dinner downtown. It's Hernandez and D'Lo Brown and Brandon and some of the other representative wrestlers. And you can, it's like $25 at some hotel. Or a two-course meal, and then you get to hang out with D'Lo and Hernandez. And then they're wrestling tomorrow here, and then I guess they're getting out to the pay-per-view.
Wow. Yeah, it's in Orlando. Thank you. Yeah, it is in Orlando Sunday. So.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, but I could be eating with Hernandez and D'Lo right now instead of talking to you two goose. But
didn't he almost kill himself like last weekend or something? Doing a dive?
It looks scarier and scarier. I think Vince said something about that last night. But yeah, he dove out last night and it looked frightening. Big things, when they're in the air, they fall really hard.
I'll never forget, like, one of those. Like, I've met him a couple times, and there was one time where he's walking, he was just kind of like in his trunks or whatever. I was kind of behind him, so I go, "Hey, what's up, Kurt Angle?" Because he looks exactly like Kurt Angle from the back, dude. I don't know if y'all ever noticed, but he just turns around, and he smiles at me, and he gives me the Hulk Hogan pose, and he says, "Kurt Angle, wish he looked like this."
We also have Bobby Roode versus James Storm versus AJ Styles. It's for the number one contendership for the title. And I don't like this, but the loser doesn't get a title shot until October of next year. So 11
that would mean
about,
that they would have to win the series or the tournament next year, huh?
It's got to be some kind of a swerve.
I predict James Storm is going to be shut out for another year.
Oh, God, so stupid. Main event is Jeff Hardy versus Austin Aries, and they are going to do this in a ladder match for the TNA world title.
I'm sure it'll be good.
I predict that will be very good.
I hope Austin wins just to get rid of that ugly belt.
That's the first thing I thought when Jeff brought two belts to the ring. I said, well, Austin Aries is obviously walking out with the cooler belt.
Well, I am definitely not getting this pay-per-view. For one thing, I'll be at work. But
I will be in Houston. I'll be in. And if Matt Cleary wants to get it, we'll get it. But I doubt it.
He's showing you a hint, Matt. He's telling you to order it right now.
No, I don't care. I really don't care.
You're going to be sitting there pouting if you don't get it, Matt. I'm telling you.
That's not going to happen.
So what are your Texas plans, by the way?
I fly in on Sunday, and I fly back out on Wednesday. That's all I really know. And there's two Eddie Vedder solo shows in there somewhere. Monday and Tuesday.
You travel the country following that dude around, don't you?
Yeah. It's, everybody's got a hobby. Some people go camping. Some people like to hike. I go to rock shows.
That's cool.
Luckily, he hasn't filed a restraining order against you, so you can still go to the shows.
Got to get caught.
I bet you have the movie Singles on DVD, don't you?
I actually do. Filmed in Seattle, for crying out loud. Anyway, there is also it'll be very, very early Sunday morning, 4 a.m. Eastern, 1 a.m. Pacific time. That's not too bad, actually. You can check out the New Japan Power Struggle iPay-per-view from Osaka, Japan. You can go to ustream.tv and look for the New Japan Pro Wrestling 1972 title. I don't know why that's there. Probably that's here was invented, so it's been around for 40 years. Okay, so that is the newest iPay-per-view from New Japan. Now, there's a list of matches here, which this will be very comical.
That's why I included it. I'm here to pronounce all these Japanese names.
Yeah, thanks. So some of these I might miss, and you just have to forgive me. Rocky Romero and Alex Kozlov will be wrestling Alex Shelley and Kushida in the IWGP Junior Tag Title match. Okay. Nakanishi, Jushin Liger, and Tiger Mask and Captain New Japan and Negra Casas versus Yano, Izuka, Ishii, and
Yoshihashi and Gato.
Gato. Okay. That's another match. Yuji Nagata and Taguchi versus Suzuki and Taichi. I'm murdering these names. Lance Archer and Davey Boy Smith Jr. Versus Kojima and Tenzan for the tag team titles. Ooh, here's another one I can get. Low-Key versus Prince Devitt for the junior title. Sakuraba and I almost said a bad word. Shibata. I love getting Jack in the Box and getting that ciabatta bread sandwich. Anyway, Sakuraba and Shibata versus Makabe and Inoue. Who?
Yeah. Wataru Inoue.
Thank you.
That's pretty sad when the hick is saying the names better than you, Craig.
It's been a long time since I watched a lot of Japanese wrestling. I think you've got me some slack here. We got Okada versus Goto for the number one contender briefcase.
What's that, like Money in the Bank?
Apparently.
Ew. I think Japan do that kind of crap.
Well, works in the States. Why not?
Well, I think it has to do with the tournament that they just had, the carnival.
Oh. Okay.
Hmm. You got Nakamura versus Carl Anderson for the IC title. And in the main event, Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Takahashi for the heavyweight title. And thank you, I made it through.
You probably insulted all of our Asian listeners.
When you do Japan, you always use just stick with the last names. It's easiest.
Yes, that's exactly what I did. I might invest some time and watch this one, because the last one was pretty darn cool.
Yeah, I got Internet Explorer on my Xbox now, so it was,
mm-hmm.
maybe I could stream it on my TV. So I was thinking about it.
I wonder if that Ustream comes down on the Roku. Let's check that out.
You still have your Roku box? Didn't you like buy that and you just used it like once or twice?
Yeah, I bought it specifically to watch the ROH pay-per-views. Well, actually, I got it for Christmas last year. And, well, really, I paid for it because, you know, it's our money. Anyway, got it for Christmas. And got it specifically to watch the ROH pay-per-views and watched one on there. And then they started doing their own. And we all know how that worked out. And now I mainly use it for Netflix.
Hmm. Well, at least you watch Netflix on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks good on the big screen. You know, I got the HDMI hooked up to it. Good stuff.
Cool.
And that's pretty much all the news we have there, Ed.
Well, there was actually like some big news that happened last night. I'm surprised that didn't make the
list. Well, that is true. Well, I know why that didn't make the list, because Contreras isn't into that. Yeah, Strikeforce is dead.
Strikeforce is dead, and Ronda Rousey's going to UFC, so now I'm going to be forced to break my promise and have to spend some money on UFC and Ronda Rousey fight.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that, because I think. By the way, Brian and Dave had actually more of. It was more Dave's argument than Brian about how the Ultimate Fighter should have the girls, and.
Dude, that'd be the highest rated fucking series ever, even though they're down.
Yeah.
Right.
And by the way, big shout out to Semper Vivi, who just demanded that I pronounce at least 5 Japanese wrestlers' names per show. Anyway, yeah, I think that would be awesome if they did all women's Tough Enough. I think it would totally turn things around.
Yeah, I mean, there are enough. There really, you know, people say there's not enough women. There really are. I mean, Jesus Christ, I watched like 20 fights on their last Invicta that thing. And there's some hot chicks on that Invicta. There's like the Karate Hottie, Michelle Watterson. There's this one girl named Kat. She was fine. They were, and you know what was awesome? They would show clips from the weigh-in, and some of these chicks were wearing freaking thongs and showing off all their shit. It was awesome.
Mm.
So, they could do it. And if they do it like the other shows where they're showing them in the house, I mean, you're going to have some bitches going crazy. And if they did the other thing they said where it's 8 guys and 8 girls, oh, Jesus Christ, you know, half of them will be all fucking by the end of the series and all kinds of shit going on.
That's a boy.
Plus, women generally hate other women, so they're probably more
right.
Rich.
And if they're really fighters, oof, that'd be awesome.
Well, I'll tell you what, the chicks that are on Invicta, those chicks, they're all good fighters for the most part. I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
So I'm actually kind of excited. A lot of them on Invicta would probably have to gain a few pounds and move up a weight class. But yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's there's plenty of hot ones out there, that's for sure. They're not all butch and ugly like the boxing chicks used to be.
Yeah, some of the the local fights that happen around here, they've got some beastly women. There's no Ronda Rouseys. Misha Tate's from around here, but the other side of the mountains. But I think it would totally bring ratings up. But to see the girls fighting in UFC, I think is going to be a good thing for UFC.
Yeah, especially considering that, you know, everything's pretty much been going down, you know, their pay-per-view buys, they've had a lot of bad luck the last year or two. So this is one good thing, and it's going to be a big, big deal when Ronda and Cyborg do fight. I mean, that's probably be one of their top pay-per-views of the year. I mean, they could put that as the main event. I mean, I'm praying to God every night that it's in July so I can go and see it.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, everybody saw the writing on the wall for Strikeforce. It was obviously on the way out.
Yeah. But you know, at least they're better fighters, they'll still have a job, and some of the shittier ones, they still have a chance to get a job with Bellator or that one that was on last week that I gave up halfway through the show. But I will say that the production was actually pretty awesome.
Yeah, I didn't see the World Fighting League or World League Fighting or whatever it was. Didn't catch that, but I heard it was decent.
Yeah. I only made it through two fights, but like I say, I mean, the production was actually awesome. It was actually better than when UFC the smaller places.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
okay.
I guess maybe I should shoot Mr. Landstorm a text while you guys talk for a minute here.
Hey, Craig, did you check out the Angry Birds Star Wars game?
I did.
It's awesome. It is awesome, isn't it? I'm playing it right now. Finally got to the Death Star.
We were talking about MMA to distract you.
I haven't got to the Death Star yet. I'm like, I'm in like where they're in outer space. But it's freaking awesome. Fucking Luke has a freaking lightsaber. The Han Solo bird, she has a fucking laser gun. Just freaking. I'm gonna be spending a lot of time playing that game.
Yeah, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you can use the Force.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these blocks up is awesome. I've been looking. That's like cake and ice cream. You can't get a better combination than Angry Birds and Star Wars.
I got to play like five.
Hey,
or six
the caller. I'm sorry. The caller number starts 347, right?
Yeah.
All right. He's listening to me on Facebook for the number.
Anyway, I got about five or six levels in, and then my son looked over my shoulder, and I was quickly disarmed with my iPad by a six-year-old. I let him win, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I roll. So, yeah.
I downloaded about 2 o'clock in the morning when it first came out. I was already still up. So.
That's awesome. It is fun.
Yeah, it's freaking great. It's the best. And then I like how the pigs can even shoot you this time.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I Facebooked him the number, so hopefully he'll be calling here in a minute.
This is going to be a heck of a short show if he doesn't call in, which I'm fine with.
Yeah, I know. It's like, okay, I'm getting a call from... Every time Lance calls, it's weird because it's like all the numbers are like one. So, Lance, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
So, Craig, you want to introduce our guest?
Sure thing. Our guest tonight is the one and only Lance Storm. And while he and Granny did not win the election, I hear they might take a run at the Prime Minister of Canada next year.
There we go. She can be my... Yeah. We don't even have a VP, so I don't know what she would be.
Yeah, I'm not Canadian, so I didn't know. So
there you go. Yeah, we beat Brian. That's the important thing.
Let's be honest. Anybody could have beaten Brian. He's a little bit opinionated, if you didn't know.
No.
And he has the wrong opinion, too.
And he chose a cat as a running mate, so.
True.
Yeah. But
running mate is what made me vote for Granny and Lance. I mean, I just was like, if one of the presidents dies, who's going to be in control, a cat, Anchor, or Lance? So that's how I decided.
Always the voice of reason, Cotrer.
That's right.
So were you disappointed that you didn't win, Lance?
I'm not losing any sleep over it. I would have been annoyed had I would have been annoyed had I lost to Brian, just because I probably would have heard about it. Where Vinny won, he doesn't care, he moves on. So I think Vinny's a fine choice.
Cool. Now speaking of elections, we just had the big one. I know you're Canadian, but I know you were following the election. What are your thoughts on the whole election that we had the other day?
I just find it interesting because I've followed a few of them now, and it's just amazing that it's such a 50-50 in your country that it really is just sort of the swaying the opinion of so few people. Because I was in the heart of my anti-U.S. pro-Canada thing in WCW when in 2000 with the George Bush one, that was the real tight race that Florida kept screwing up. And who was the guy that ran against him? Geez, I'm trying to remember now.
Gore.
You know, where Gore won the popular vote but lost the election. And while that, I don't believe, happened this time, I think in the final count, I think Obama did win the popular vote by a couple. It's amazing how 50-50 the nation is, especially when you consider that it seems every pro-Obama guy thinks that the Republican candidate will be the ruination of the entire country. And all the Republicans think that a Democrat getting in will, you know, send you off into communism, the whole country will fall apart. It's amazing how different of opinion. And again, I think Donald Trump takes the cake for just the biggest lunatic of the world, but he was entertaining on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, my Facebook has been insane since the election. I mean, the Republicans are taking it hard, and they're like, man, they are bitter. And I'm sure it would have been the same way had it gone the other way. But it's like, you know, I've seen a lot of good friends get into some serious arguments. And, you know, I bet a lot of people lost friends over the whole thing.
Yeah, I think the best, there was a photo on Facebook I saw that has the, you know, how you see your candidate, and it's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah,
and how you see the other candidate, which is the Darth Vader, and then how the rest of the world sees the candidate is Jar Jar Binks. I thought that was very suiting.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
But, yeah, I guess the important thing is you can now visit Colorado and Washington, Ed, and be a very happy man.
Right.
Well, it's not
and
like I have
married.
A problem doing it here. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Although, and again, I'm far from a pot advocate, but I'm at least impressed with the fact that they had enough balls to just go, okay, look, it's recreational. Let's not kid ourselves with this medical marijuana bullshit. It's like, it's so absurd to, you know, the whole concept of the medical marijuana and how easy it seems for people to get it. It's like, let's just call a spade, and if you're going to legalize it, just man up and legalize it already.
And if I'm not mistaken, isn't it pretty much just like alcohol? You know, I think you got to be 21.
I think so.
You can't drive under the influence, or supposedly. It sounds like it just got downgraded a little bit from what it was.
Basically,
yeah, I think they've got a lot of details to work out, but I think for the most part it'll be regulated much like tobacco and alcohol.
Basically, we have a lot of these quote unquote medical marijuana places popping up all over the place in the last few years already, and so this was just like the next step. To decriminalize it and whatnot. I don't know. I don't care either way. I don't think it's any worse than... I never heard of a stone driver killing a family of four, you know, because they can't get off the couch to drive anywhere. You know that.
Yeah. So I'm about as anti-drug as you're going to get, and it's like, I really think there's probably bigger fish to fry on the grand scale, be it Canada or U.S. nationally, than worrying about a guy that's probably smoking pot anyway.
That's fair. Speaking of, we wanted to get your opinion on the Scott Steiner lawsuit.
Hey, that's a good segue, Craig. I'm impressed.
Hey, thanks.
the one over the Jeff Hardy... injury,
yeah.
Or at least the alleged injury.
Yeah.
It's interesting in that, you know, I don't know if there has ever been, I suppose the mass transit one would be, but I don't know if there's ever been a he hurt me in a wrestling match, therefore I am suing him for damages. I think that's at least it's the first one I can.
The Abdullah the Butcher thing, kind of. The guy who said he got hepatitis from Abdullah.
I suppose. I have no idea where that's gone since, but yeah, I suppose that one would be similar, although that one at least is a little bit more out of the realm in that it wasn't so much an injury in a match where, you know, guys get hurt all the time because different things go on. I would imagine it would be a fairly hard one, especially considering it's this far after the fact, would be a hard one to prove, unless he's hoping that TNA will just throw him some money to disappear and go away and not say bad things about their current champion. But
if it was WWE, he'd get a lot of money for it.
Yeah, quite probably. My only problem, and obviously, if TNA is allowing him to work in a dodgy state, then I think there probably is some degree of culpability. But coming from a guy that worked in ECW, there were occasions where perhaps people weren't in the best of situations, and I was always aware of my surroundings and always made sure that either I did nothing with people that were out of not in the best control of their faculties. So if I would have thought that, again, we'll use Jeff Hardy as an example if you want. If I ever was working on a show and thought Jeff Hardy wasn't in the greatest of working condition, I'd have made sure he didn't do anything that would give him a chance to hurt me. I either refused to work or tie him up, take him down, leave him on the mat, and it's like, we're just going to wrestle and keep this simple because I'm not letting you jump off anything at me because I don't trust you. I don't know the conditions at the time or, again, how much pressure he perhaps had with the office to, you go out there and work or you're not getting paid, I don't know, but I'm a firm believer in taking care of yourself, and if he appears to not be in working condition, then I'd shut the guy down before he had a chance to do anything.
It's kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say it's laughable because it's like, he's complaining about this, but if you go back to like the mid-80s, I mean, how many matches did Ric Flair wrestle for 30 minutes, 60 minutes with somebody who was intoxicated or stoned? And how many matches? I mean, I'm not saying it's right, I'm just saying that it's like, he's making too big of a deal of it, so I don't think it's as bad as it is.
Well, I don't like your argument because it's, and again, I've heard the stories of, a real bad one of Kerry Von Erich being in a bad way and Flair carrying him through a match, but it's like, I think that situation is, horrendously bad and unprofessional, so I don't think that justifies horrendous and unprofessional behavior in the future just because someone else put up with it. So I think if he is in bad shape, then I think there is some degree of responsibility, especially now that guys are, in fact, legitimate employees, where, back in Ric Flair's day, there were a lot more legitimate independent contractor status where it would have been a case of, in the Kerry Von Erich situation where, World Class was independently contracting Ric Flair from the NWA to come in and work this show. So Flair at that point is going to decide where, I'm going to work this and get my really huge payday, or I'm going to refuse and not. And it really is more of an individual decision, I believe, in that era where, Scott Steiner would have had a annual contract. If you work this many shows, you get paid this much per year. Jeff Hardy has a contract. So they're both employed by the same company. So I think there is a greater responsibility on the company. My only real qualm is that I find it hard to believe that if, Scott Steiner at the time thought Jeff was dangerous and unfit to work, that he couldn't have physically take care of himself and not taken the risks. That would be only my concern. But that and also being filed a fair bit after the fact, I think, again, hurts his credibility in it, that you're just filing suit now over these injuries you suffered. What is it, close to a year ago?
Yeah.
It's been a while. He's been off TV for like a long time. And another thing that I kind of find a little funny, I mean, I don't think he's hurt like a lot of people, but you used to always hear the stories about the Steiner brothers. You know, you felt it if you were in a match with him. So it's not like Scott has always been known to be the safest guy out there.
Well, no, but I've worked with him numerous times over the last 12 years, and he sure as hell never hurt me. He certainly could have if he wanted to, but he never did. But I think, and again, this may be where his chance of victory would be, in that, you know, when you look at, you know, TNA's record, as far as the situation that Jeff was in when they hired him, you know, there was the pay-per-view where Sting worked him when he certainly shouldn't have. So they certainly have a track record that's going to make them look very, very bad. So they may want to give him a few dollars and say, please, Mr. Steiner, will you please let this drop? Because I think, you know, there is a bad track record by this company in that they've hired several people off, you know, drug failure or drug rehab refusals out of WWE. And there is at least one instance, perhaps more, of Jeff Hardy not being in the best of condition. Now, it's sad if it all gets dragged out now, because from all accounts that I've heard from people I know there, Jeff has actually got his shit together for a change. You know, for quite a while now, he's been apparently really good. But there was certainly a period where he wasn't, and it didn't seem to be of primary concern to the office. So I think there could be some degree of liability here, and they may want to give him a little bit to go away. But it is an interesting situation when, again, we're going into a wrestling match to pretend to beat each other up and then complaining that you got hurt. But, again, if he is in a bad state, and I have no idea if he was back then it gets interesting.
Yeah.
It was odd that he was talking about, you know, Hulk Hogan booked this and laid the match out, and this is a house show, and Hogan's not going to have anything to do with matches on a house show or something like that. That'd be one of the agents in the back or something.
Well, again, depending on when it was, you know, Hogan might have been the one that, much like when, you know, in WWE, it's like the agent's the one there that, you know, technically runs things at the show, but they do get a fax or an email from the office with, this is the lineup, this is who we want over, et cetera. So it's possible that Hogan's part of the guy that oversees it with, again, we're pushing this guy, what's our host show lineup for this month, Hulk? And he goes over it with whoever, and maybe Hulk is the last one that goes, hey, for the main event, let's have Jeff Hardy and Scott Steiner in our main event, and let's have Jeff Hardy go up with his finish. Like, there's a possibility that that is Hogan's call, and it's written on a piece of paper and sent to all the house shows, and then it would be an Al Snow or a D'Lo Brown or a Pat Kenny or whoever, I would assume, that's at the house shows that takes the list that he's given from the office with, well, these are the matches, guys, and gets things done. But it is possible that it did come from a Hulk Hogan approval that Scott Steiner and Jeff Hardy will be in this main event. And I suppose there is the possibility that cheat also said, you know, Jeff Hardy up with his swanton, and perhaps if he was intoxicated doing a swanton and mistargeted, he could land on somebody. But it'll be interesting if it progresses.
Just be safe with Flame Al Snow. Just be safe with Flame Al Snow.
Pardon?
I said just to be safe with Flame Al Snow.
There we go, or at least blame the jacket he wore last night on Impact.
we actually have a caller on the line, so I'm going to actually take a chance and take the call, and hopefully it'll be a good one here. It's got a weird number. Caller Ron Wee 86.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. Do you have a question for Ed Storm?
Yes. This one is, I don't know if you heard about this, but I wanted to ask, I'm started out into wrestling, and I'm now 5'7", I'm 156. Do you think that should I go to FCW and start my wrestling career there, or should I just go independent?
Well, again, there's a chance of success or failure in either route. You know what I mean? where, again, at your size, you're going to have to be a phenomenal athlete and probably have a good degree of charisma in that you are very small by wrestling standards. But, again, if you have all the other abilities. But regardless, if you go to FCW and manage to get into their beginner program, you're still going to be starting independently because you're going to get trained by them and you're going to have to probably go out and work independent shows and get experience. The chances of you at that size being trained at FCW and then progressing to the developmental program right for that are going to be extremely slim. So in either regard, you're going to have to get some training and then go work independently and try to prove that you have talent, because at that size, you know, WWE or TNA, you're going to have a name and get noticed. Because even someone as good as Daniel Bryan, you know, if he hadn't have been, you know, amazing in Ring of Honor and working successfully and really built up a name for himself, they wouldn't have had interest in who's this guy that's, you know, 5'9 and, you know, 190 pounds, or whatever, however big he is. You know, he had to prove himself beyond a shadow of a doubt before he got a chance. So you're going to have to work independently regardless of where you go.
Well, the thing is that, like, I was, because since I'm 5'7", I was trying to work my weight up from 156 to 208, like what Rey Mysterio has. And the thing is that I was hoping that, you know, 208 would be fine since Rey Mysterio did it. And, you know, if that really works for WWE, then I'll be happy about that. But if it doesn't, then, you know, I hope TNA has some kind of program where I can go in.
Well, for starters, I can pretty much guarantee you Rey Mysterio is not 208 pounds. And regardless, you're talking about putting on more than 50 pounds of lean muscle mass, which is going to take you, barring copious amounts of drugs, probably more than a decade. You don't just put on 50 pounds, again, unless you're just eating at Dunkin' Donuts, you know, in a short period of time. So you've got a long, slow road ahead of yourself.
But do you really think that I have a pretty good weight right as of right now because of my height and trying to start out?
Well, you're going to need to be bigger than that size. But again, I have no idea whether you're, you know, a lean and halfway conditioned 156 pounds or whether you're tremendously out of shape at 156 pounds. It's hard to tell that over the phone. So,
well, I'm basically, because I put myself in a goal lift to see if I can do this, which is kind of retarded to say, but it's more of I was trying to be as lean as what Rey Mysterio, I mean not Rey Mysterio, but Randy Orton was, and I know that he's a little bit taller than me, of course, but the thing is that I'm that sort of lean, and the way that I was going to go into training and so forth, I was more of going into high-flying moves instead of just being grounded a lot, and I was hoping that since I was maybe between the certain senses of 156 to 170, that, you know, it wouldn't bother the talent relations very much because I was doing high flying and all these better physical moves that is displayed with Rey Mysterio or Sin Cara or someone in that sort of era of a way.
Yeah, well, again, in any result, it's like if you look into training, you've got probably several years of garnering experience before you have to worry about anyone involved in a talent relations level. So, you know what I mean? It's like continue to work on your time in the gym, go get training wherever you choose to. Again, if you're willing to travel, you can check out my school or you can look into Florida or, again, any other school you want to. and see if you have an aptitude for the job, and then go from there.
Yeah,
okay.
We want to wish you luck and good luck on your future career in wrestling. But we do have a lot of things we got to cover, so I do got to let you go now. But thank you for calling in, and we appreciate you listening to the show.
Way to take control, Ed.
Yeah. Couture, you want to ask a question?
Sure, are you awake?
He may have tapped after that call.
He's always got the pizza man coming in the show, so he may be going to get a pizza. So, Frank, I'll throw it over to you.
Completely off topic, you know, have you ever had a guy show up to your school and you're just like, this is not going to work out?
You always get, well, again, I don't want to say always, but you get them now and again for sure. It's been a dream, or they're, again, you could probably use the word delusional at times. But there are, you do get some that for some reason believe that since it's fake, it's easy. And they soon find out that it is neither easy nor fake, and they don't last long. And then there's some that surprise you, that first day you shake your head at and go, you know, no way in hell. And then by, you know, be it a month in or 2 months in, that something starts to click and you go, well, you know, they're not going to be great, but, you know, maybe they'll be able to get to the point where they can go out and do decently on the indies and see what happens with them. So sometimes they surprise you, and sometimes you end up being proven right. And then on those better days, you get the people that go, wow, this guy's got a real aptitude for it, and you kind of cross your fingers and think maybe they'll have something.
Well, like this kid that just called, I get the opinion he thinks it's a lot easier to get into wrestling than it is. How often do you get someone who thinks that, hey, I want to train for Lance for a few weeks, and boom, I'll go talk to John Laurinaitis or Triple H or whatever, get a job? I mean, how many people actually don't have the grasp of, you know, what it takes? You would think people who are going to wrestling school would be wrestling fans and would know, but I would assume you get the people who are just trying to just jump right in there.
I don't know how many of them are the ones that actually show up, but there's a lot of initial email inquiries that you get for the, you know, how often are WWE scouts at your school? Will I be scouted right out of your school? You know, how soon after I graduate do I get my, you know, FCW tryout? And it's like, boy, even like this caller who's, you know, wanting to, you know if it's going to put off talent relations, how big he is today. You know, there's guys that, just look at the last student of mine that just got signed to, I guess it's called NXT now. I don't think they even use FCW anymore. You know, Tom LaRuffa, the guy that did World of Hurt with me. It's like, you know, he trained with me in 2006 and, you know, worked in a lot of places, you know, Mexico, the U.S., all over Europe and in France and, you know,
and
really
he,
busted.
And he's pretty
really,
jacked. I mean, he definitely has the, you know, WWE body. I mean, he's had it for a while, too.
He's not really large. If he's 200 pounds, that's probably at most, because he is so lean. Again, he's in really good shape, and is a pretty talented guy with good personality. But, you know, it took him 6 years after my school before he got his chance. And there's others that, you know, there's guys that have been working for, you know, a decade or more before they got their chance. If you've seen him on NXT, what's his name? Rick Victor. He's wrestled on NXT television a few times. And while he's not one of my students, he's from Calgary area. And he was working the PWA shows when I first took the book. And he's been to my school a couple times just to get extra ring time and stuff. And I've wrestled with him. And, you know, I think he was, you know, 10, maybe 11 years in the business by the time he got his chance in NXT. So, you know, he logged a lot of years. And I think there are a lot of people that just think you go to wrestling school and then you go to developmental and then you're on SmackDown. And they think that it's going to be a 2-year turnaround. And, you know, I guess it's because they hear the stories of, you know, a Kurt Angle or a Randy Orton. And these guys that had sort of a more expressed route to developmental, but you don't realize that, you know, Randy Orton and Richie Steamboat and guys that have a Hall of Fame level wrestler as a father, have an easier route in getting noticed and getting a shot. Now, granted, I believe Richie, I think his dad actually had him, work other places and try to develop a bit more seasoning before he accepted a developmental deal. But for your average Joe, there's guys that have been out on the indie scene for, you know, a dozen and 15 years and still haven't got the break, so to speak. So it's not easy.
Well, I think, like, Daniel Bryan went, like, 10 years between developmental deals.
Yeah, quite probably. And really, and when you know, it's probably close to 15 years when he actually got what you would consider his break, where he actually, you know, started getting used, you know, on the major show.
Yeah. So, Couture, are you back yet?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Lance, what were your thoughts on Brad Armstrong? Did you ever work with him?
I was really upset when I heard that he passed. I didn't know him well. I really only met him once. William Regal and Brad came to one of the ECW shows we did in Marietta, Georgia. And I just saw him in the parking lot out back of the show and just talked to them briefly for a few minutes. But I felt like I knew him more so, just that I'd known everybody else in the family. I met Brian Armstrong just when he was first breaking in. I think he had just gotten back from Desert Storm in 94 when I was in Smoky and was just starting to train. And then, you know, met a few times Scott and Steve via Smoky Mountain. And then knew Bob the best out of them all because Bullet Bob worked Smoky quite a bit. And he was a really good guy, so I talked to him quite a bit. So because I had more of an association with the family through Smoky Mountain and then the last, you know, half a dozen times I've been to WWE shows, Scott Armstrong's there, and I always talk to him and, you know, ask him to say hi to his dad for me. So I've got a bit of a friendship with the family. So that kind of hit me hard. And I was a big Brad Armstrong fan. You know, when I was still just a wrestling fan, I always thought he was really good. And I was always the one that I liked wrestling and wrestlers. So the fact that he didn't have the gimmick and all the other crap certainly didn't matter to me. I liked watching him wrestle. And I think I made a comment, I don't remember if it was on Twitter or Facebook or something, but when I was training with Jericho in 90 in the Heart Camp, you know, we were talking about different aspirations and so forth and expressing how important it was for me to be good at the job. I said, you know, more than anything, I want to be respected, you know, as a good worker. And I said, you know, I would much rather be a Brad Armstrong than an Ultimate Warrior. And Warrior was champ in WWE at the time. That I would rather have less fame and fortune, if you will, but be respected for what I could do than be someone that nobody wanted to work with but was a big star. And Brad Armstrong was the person I used as the example. So I've always held Brad in really high regard on his abilities. And again, I've met, five Armstrongs, and I've never met an Armstrong I didn't like. Just all really good, you know, down-to-earth people that are just so nice. So hearing that he passed at 50 or 51, I'm not sure how old he was, it was really, it was upsetting. And I've never heard a bad word about an Armstrong either. So it's sad when you lose one of the good ones.
He was kind of like a guy like, I guess you say he's a guy like Bobby Eaton, which you never heard a bad thing about. Always everybody pretty high.
Yeah, very much so. And one of those guys that anytime you hear his name announced across from yours, you're happy. now I've always heard that Bobby was a guy who's a huge fan of his work. And he was, anyone I've ever talked to that was in WCW back in the heyday of the Midnight Express, there's always, you know, the handful of like those three or four guys you think, man, these are really like the top-notch workers. But anyone I ever talked to from that era always said that Bobby was the man. It's like, you know, there's a lot of great workers, but it's like you get right down to it, it's like, you know, Bobby's the man. It's like there's just no one easier in the ring or better in the ring than Bobby. But yeah, Brad's one of those guys that I've never heard anything bad about. And again, he's one of those guys. And I think Dave mentioned that he had the role in WCW of, you know, the new guys. So we'll put him in with Brad. And if he can't have a good match, then he's never going to. I remember
he was like the WCW version of Tito Santana.
I suppose. But I remember too, because when Dave said that about Brad, I remember actually saying that about Arn Anderson. That, you know, the back in the day when they were, you know, they were debuting a lot of people, the PN Newses and the Van Hammers and so forth. And, you know, you'd see Arn Anderson have a bad match with someone. And I think I commented to someone, it's like, you know, when they're giving somebody their first match or their tryout, they should really just put them in with Arn Anderson. And if they don't have a good match, then just fire them on the spot. Because if you can't have a good match with Arn Anderson, then it's all down the hill from there. And I would imagine Brad Armstrong would be another one of that same type, and you wouldn't have to use somebody that was as much of a top guy. Although I can't imagine an Arn Anderson or a Brad Armstrong would enjoy that role of, here's another big stiff, let's see if you can go have a good match with them.
I think he was maybe the equivalent, like WWF with the 1-2-3 kid. They'd always throw the new guys in with the kid when they came up, just because he could have a good match with pretty much anybody.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Val was in that role for a while, too, in WWE, when they really weren't doing too much with him, especially when they put him back in that damn Val Venus gimmick after they got rid of it with the Chief Morley thing. You know, he did a lot of house show loops. I did, too, at that point in time, with guys getting brought up from developmental, you know, when they were bringing up the, you know, the Jindraks and the Cades and the different people. It's like, you know, their first few house show loops would be with us or one or the other, and it was... I think not only that they figured, you know, we'd be able to teach them and move them along, but, you know, they'd get to find out if they were capable of having a good match. Although that came back to bite the office in the ass several times, that they would bring up a couple guys from developmental and they'd send them on the road quite often with Val and I in a tag match. And they'd get these really great agent reports. Yeah, really good match, really great stuff. And then they'd put them on TV with somebody else. And it wouldn't go so well, and then be like, what the hell, you guys said these guys were good, and it's like, maybe you didn't read the report careful enough. You can't necessarily put these guys in with themselves, but if you give any two of them together with Val and I, it's like, we can pretty much get this job done. Yeah, it's a valuable part of the industry, having, again, those really talented workers that... can take somebody by the hand and teach them and move it along. And I'm fearful that those people are disappearing in our industry because there isn't quite the depth. And I think part of it, too, is everyone's desperate to try to find that next John Cena breakout star that a lot of the journeyman wrestlers, if you will, get overlooked. Although, to be honest, too, I think in a lot of ways, because there hasn't been... you know, another John Cena, Rock, Austin, you know, breakout, you know, Hulk Hogan type big personality that really has a chance to get over, that a lot of the journeyman wrestlers are being able to get stepped up into that role, which is great for them and it's really good. But when the journeymans that used to be your upper middle, lower upper end that really held the... really held it all together, you know, we're the mortar, so to speak, with all these bricks. When the mortar become the, you know, the ribbon on top of the cake, and then the cake doesn't have a whole lot of substance to hold it together, you know, you end up in a bad situation. Where, and again, I'm not trying to shortchange anybody, but, you know, again, you know, you have CM Punk as the top guy. You know, he's a champ, he's been there a year. And again, I'm a big Punk supporter. I think it's great. But, you know, if you would go back to a lot of other generations, people of his ability, look and performance would probably be, you know, the third or fourth or fifth from the top. You know, when you look at a, you know, a Ted DiBiase, you know, who was never really got that top spot, but, you know, a fantastic promo, a fantastic worker. You know, when you look at the Roddy Pipers and, you know, other guys that were, you know, top shelf main event, style guys that never really were the top dog. You know, the industry has really changed in that regard. That we don't have as many star makers as we used to. And in a rush to find stars, I think some of the star makers are getting overlooked, and the industry has less depth because of it.
To change the subject a little bit, I just remembered a while back we had Mikey Whitbrick on the show, and He mentioned that whenever Van Damme would make his entrance in ECW, he said that him, you, and Jerry Lynn, like, rewrote the words to the songs and bust out singing every time he would go to the ring.
Yes, we had alternative lyrics to the Walk by, was it Kilgore that he used to use? Well, yeah, I think he ended up using the Kilgore remake when we had to put it on the CD.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, the original was Pantera, and then they ended up doing... Because we actually, Kilgore actually shot their music video with a bunch of us in the place in Queens at one point. I think it's still up. You know, if you search for it, you can find the Kilgore video, which has a bunch of the ECW guys lip-syncing through the video. But yeah, we were always trying to find a way of... stooging the lyrics off, you will, to the crowd, hoping that they could pick up on it, but we never come up with a way we could get them to do it. But I'm just trying to think what they actually were.
He said it started off with something like...
It was like real, yeah. Stiff chair, kick in the face. I thought this was real. Yeah. And we just sort of went from there. Yeah, it was the real, stiff chair, kick in the face. I thought this was real. And we would sing this backstage, the three of us. PJ would join in sometimes, too. Because when you worked with Rob, you did occasionally get a real stiff chair kick in the face. And there was times where you thought, does he think this is real? But
maybe Stone.
Although, to his credit, not to just bury Rob, you had a lot of really great matches with Rob, and the guy'd work real hard. and again, as much as you did occasionally get caught with a stiff kick, he'd be the last person to complain if you haul off and potato the shit out of him. So I'm certainly not trying to bury Rob. I had a lot of really good matches with Rob. But we did like to make fun of these lyrics to his song.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because Mikey and I even used to joke. On the occasions whenever Mikey and I, or Jerry, the three of us really, any combination of the three of us that worked together, we would always rejoice in the fact that it was going to be very, very fake that night. Like Mikey, he's like, we're working tonight. It's like, yeah, it's going to be very fake. And he's like, yeah, I know. It's like, we're not actually going to hit each other at all. Because there's a lot of guys in ECW that they forgot the very important fact that this was supposed to be a work.
Now, with that said, there was a show, Barely Legal, where you hit Van Damme with a chair and the crowd turned on you.
I remember that.
I mean, you didn't hurt the guy, and the crowd just, man, they booed the heck out of you.
You know, the thing that's really funny is, again, I still get people that, you know, oh, my God, what was with those chair shots? And, you know, it's funny because I just watched the Fit Finlay documentary, the Irish documentary they did on the Fit Finlay family.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a chair shot in there from way back in the 70s or sometime, I don't remember when. And again, it's probably, you know, a third as hard as the ones I hit Rob with. And, you know, you go back and watch, you know, pre-Attitude Era, pre-ECW, pre-Japan FMW chair shots, and mine was probably just on maybe a hair on the light side of average of what a working chair shot used to be. But, you know, back in the day when people used to work light and not actually hit each other like idiots, but there was a lot of chair shots that, you know, perhaps wouldn't look all that stiff because guys were trying to be careful with people. And, again, I wasn't at that stage in my life comfortable hitting somebody in the head with a steel object. But it really was, and, again, I at that point hadn't done a whole lot of time in ECW, so I was unaware of the or also unwilling to partake in the, no, we just, you know, murder people here and don't right. care. So, yeah, by ECW standards, they were the most pathetic things in the world. But I think probably if you go back and look at some of the, you know, territory era footage of a lot of chair shots, there probably was a lot that were probably on par with the ones I did. Although in hindsight, if I had to do it over again, I'd have done it exactly the same because it made the finish better. Because there was the three, you know, the two or three chair shots that he then just, you know, countered and Van Damme-inated me. So for the sake of the babyface reaction for Rob on the finish, having the crowd and creating as much heat as I did with those weak chair shots into the finish actually made the finish better. That was not my intent at the time. I'm not saying that was my plan, but if I had to do it over again, I'd do it the same way for the sake of getting that good reaction.
Now that someone actually wanted us to ask you about the Finley documentary, could you give us your review or your overall thoughts on it?
I really enjoyed it. I know most of the people in it, so it makes it a lot more entertaining. Like, I've obviously worked with Fit a lot. I actually met and was in the ring and wrestled a little bit with his dad in Europe back in either 93 or 95. And I know Mel, his wife, halfway decent. We used to talk a fair bit when we were in Europe in 93 and 95, so I spoke with her several times there. And actually, when I went to Mania, or the Hall of Fame for Edge's Hall of Fame induction, we met at the hotel. They had a big, you know, green area for the boys to wait. And we had to stand around and wait for probably more than an hour before we got bussed over to the Hall of Fame. And she was the one that I ended up pairing off with and talking most of the evening before the Hall of Fame with. I've always gotten along with her. And she thinks she's just a fabulous woman. So the fact that I would have met David III, I guess he would be, you know, back when he was only a few months old in Europe. So I really found it interesting. And a lot of the old footage of the wrestling from England and Ireland and stuff, I thought was really, really interesting. There's two criticisms I have. One, I found the audio levels really up and down. I watched it on my main TV in my living room, because I've got Apple TV and can do YouTube through it. And whenever they had wrestling clips, the volume was like, you know, blowing my ears off. And then when you'd have the narrator talking about what's going on, I'd have to, you know, crank the volume back up because she was really quiet. So I had to really keep the remote in my hand to up and down the volume. And then probably the only other criticism I have, and this may just be more with me, that anytime there's a wrestling documentary, be it, again, an autobiography, a movie, a documentary, whatever else, I always have my bullshit meter on. Because I'm waiting to see if they're just going to work and make crap up. And the documentary opens up with, he's one of the most famous wrestlers in the world. And they really build Fit up as, you know, one of the most famous wrestlers in the world. And again, they show footage of him at WrestleMania in front of, you know, 70,000 people or whatever. So he's certainly a very famous wrestler. But with my microscopic bullshit meter out, I'm like, you know, he's not The Rock or Steve Austin. So it just seemed like, okay, that's a slight exaggeration for the sake of the documentary. And I just hate when you have such a great story to tell. I'd rather them not have any exaggeration. I would have rather them just say the line, you know, he's known the world over. He's a very famous wrestler, because he very much is. But it's just when you say he's one of the most famous wrestlers in the world, I just think, you know, if you took a 1,000 people at random and said, hey, name the top 10 most famous wrestlers in the world, I don't know how many of them would mention Fit Finley. So that was really my only critique as far as any detail they had in. I really found it interesting and enjoyed it. It's only 51 minutes or something. It's really great. And again, I love Fit and have so much respect for him. I still to this day think he's probably the most talented man I've ever been in the ring with. And I've been in the ring with a lot of people, so.
Cool. I guess we can start wrapping up. Katrin, you want to answer your last question?
Yeah, I was wondering, when you're training your students, you know, do you ever require them to, like, watch certain matches of certain people, or do any of them ever come to you and request to watch something that they know you have?
There's a lot of guys that come to me and ask what they should watch, or do I have recommendations on certain people to watch. But I don't specifically go, hey, you need to watch this guy, although I am a big... if I have people struggling with selling, I strongly suggest Shawn Michaels, Ricky Steamboat, and Ricky Morton.
What about Kerry Von Erich?
I haven't, you know, I only saw Kerry Von Erich as the Texas Tornado. Because I never really saw a whole lot of world class. So I really don't have a whole lot of opinion on Kerry Von Erich.
The reason I bring up Kerry is because Kerry is, like, as big as he was, usually it's hard for big guys to get sympathy, and he was, like, as far as guys his size, I always considered thought he was the best at it.
But you're talking about world-class stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, and I've never really seen a lot of that. And although, granted, I've got a fair bit of world-class stuff in my DVD library, but I haven't really seen a lot of that. So my quick three picks for guys that were just phenomenal sellers, Steamboat Sean and Ricky Morton. I think Ricky Morton's name slides through the cracks a lot, but, you know, that guy could sell his ass off. But, yeah, I've got I don't know how many DVDs there are in it, 300 or 400 probably. I'm at my school library, and I encourage people to watch as much as they can and encourage them to not watch it as a fan anymore and try to see it through different eyes. And, again, I've had some students, you know, that are, whether they're bigger and slower, it's like, you know, who do you think I should watch? I'm shorter, I'm smaller, whatever. Who do you think I should watch? And I give them recommendations and so forth on people that I think might help them out. But I don't have specific required viewing.
Do you have any thoughts on Pat Patterson selling? I always thought he was pretty awesome.
Again, Pat was from the generation that I didn't watch a whole lot of his work. You know, I wasn't a wrestling fan until, you know, 84, 85. So I haven't seen a lot of Pat Patterson. The only real thing I can vouch for in Pat Patterson is just his knowledge as far as putting matches together and his psychology, because I've worked with Pat as an agent, and the man's absolutely brilliant. But I haven't watched a ton of his wrestling. Because I haven't, primarily because I just don't have time to go back and watch a lot of the older stuff I might want to and really enjoy. You know, to this day, I don't think I've been meaning to, I just never have the time. I don't think I've seen, you know, but maybe one Bruno Sammartino match in my lifetime, and it was probably, you know, in his late comeback, you know, in the 80s when he did, a one-shot. Actually, I think I might have seen the Shea Stadium match, because I know I've got that on DVD and looked at it, but... I haven't watched a lot of stuff, you know, pre-1980. You know, I've watched some older Japanese stuff, and I've watched some older Stampede stuff, but I haven't watched a lot of the old WWF stuff from earlier generations.
Craig, go ahead and ask your last question.
Last question. Everybody has, any wrestling fan has their favorite Lance Storm match. Is there a match that, like, not a lot of people saw that you wish more people would have seen?
I know there's one match in particular that I wish I've seen. I did a, I think it was a, I'm trying to think what the belt was called. I think it was like the Intercontinental Middleweight title match I had with Fit Finlay in Europe. We did a championship match in Europe in 1995. That I remember just thinking was fabulous the night we did it. Apparently, I don't know if he still does, but I know at one point Dave mentioned that his dad had it on video, that he had recorded it that night. And I had, you know, begged Fit every time I could think of it. It's like, oh, you got to get a copy, you got to get a copy. And I never had him produce the copy. So that match is the one that I really wish I'd seen. Most of the really great stuff is stuff that, you know, you did not on TV that... you know, falls into the cracks. You know, I had a couple single matches in Japan with Jericho that I really wish would have been, you know, on VHS back then to be kept. There's one match of Jericho and I from Japan that's out there on YouTube, but it's only the last 8 minutes of what was probably a 17-minute match. I was really, really happy with the Bryan Danielson match from Ring of Honor. You know, I was really pleased with that, and I don't know how many people have actually seen that. I think that's probably one of the lesser-viewed matches that I was really, really happy with. I wish the Impact Players, Jado and Gato from the ECW Arena, I believe that one, too, was only the last, you know, 5 or 6 minutes of the match. I wish they had the whole match because it was a really great night, and I thought the match really came together, but... I think to really have an idea on what the match accomplished, you had to see it all. Because when Jado and Gato hit the ring, the crowd was completely dead silent. It was like crickets. It was because it was the ECW Arena fans really were you haven't done it here, so who are you? And right. We're not accepting you until you've proved something to us. And also, too, Jado and Gato had worked Danny Doring and Roadkill the night before in New Jersey and really shit the bed. They were trying to be too polite and respectful, and they didn't want to really initiate anything and take the ball themselves. And I think Danny and Roadkill were a little bit in awe of Jado and Gato and just sort of stayed tentative and waited for them to do something, and it ended up being nobody really took initiative, and the match was horrible. Mm-hmm. So word had already got out that these guys suck, and they come out, and it's like, who are these guys? It's like, yeah, they wrestled in Japan, but they haven't been in the ECW arena. So the crowd had no interest in seeing those two guys, and by the end of the match, they were chanting FMW at them. And just absolutely loved them. So it was really, you know, the accomplishment that the four of us did, taking them from, you know, who the hell are you guys, to, oh my God, you're awesome. So it was a really great night for me, and I really enjoyed that match. And it's a shame the whole match isn't out there. At least I don't believe it's out there. I've never seen the whole match.
My last question is, since Dave had his Hall of Fame come out this week, and there's John Cena went into the Hall of Fame. John Cena has a lot of haters, and a lot of people are, like, saying he's not good enough to be in the Hall of Fame. If Sting's not, you know, in the Hall of Fame, then my thoughts are, what are your thoughts on John Cena as a first-year intern into the Hall of Fame?
I think he belongs in, because you have to remember that, again, the wrestling business isn't entirely about who's the greatest wrestler or worker. You know what I mean? The Hall of Fame is about drawing money and carrying a company and so forth, and you can't argue that John Cena has been doing that for a long time. If you don't put John Cena in, you can't put anybody from the modern era in, or at least, you know, the last, you know, the anything past Rock and Austin era, because really Cena's been the biggest deal since then. And yeah, he's not exactly Dean Malenko on the technical wrestling side, but again, there's more to the industry than that. And, you know, the man has been the face of the largest company for a long time. He's one of the few people in this industry that actually legitimately move numbers, be them merch sales, ticket sales, ratings, or what have you, I absolutely think he does get in. And, again, if this was just going to be a work rate contest in the ring, it's like I'd like to think I go in before John Cena, but this isn't. This is pro wrestling, and John Cena goes in before a lot of other people, me included. So, and again, I'm not ever going in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, nor should I. But again, if you want to just look at work rate, it's like, yeah, I think there's a lot of guys that are better than John Cena. When you come to being a major player and carrying a company, that list gets really, really short.
What do you think Edge's chances are?
I think they're relatively good. I think they also go up as older generation guys, again, I don't want to say pass on, but stop voting or stop following. Because I can see where, you know, people from the older, you know, territory system, when the business, you actually did have to draw money. You know what I mean? Where, you know, I could, you know, let's just take an Ole Anderson guy. I have no idea if he votes or not, but I can see him thinking, you know, Edge being a, you know, a however many time champion on SmackDown really doesn't carry the weight of what, you know, Ric Flair did in his day, or Bruno did in his day, or, you know, when winning the world title was a lot different situation. Where I can see that a guy from an Ole Anderson school of thought and era in the business would think that very few people in today's industry deserve a Hall of Fame spot. But it's more a situation that the industry has legitimately changed. That, you know, you really can't be the guy that they put the title on you and all of a sudden, you know, business is up everywhere and you can, you know, really justify that you've changed business and you carry the ball for 6 or 7 years. You know, the whole, you know, the industry is not like that anymore. And I think when you look at the modern era of what the wrestling industry has become, I think Edge is a Hall of Fame caliber level star, you know. Now, granted, he was never the face of WWE, but he was the face of SmackDown, which, you know, I think you could argue is the number two promotion in the U.S. right now. So I think he deserves it. And again, he, you know, when you're the WrestleMania main event for the world title against The Undertaker, and it was, you know, I think that carries some weight. Now, again, just because you're in the title match at WrestleMania doesn't mean you're a Hall of Famer, but I would put Edge in by modern-day wrestling standards, not by, you know, 70s and 80s wrestling standards, perhaps. But I think in the current age of wrestling, I think a guy like Edge has a good chance of getting in.
Cool. Well, and just real quick before we let you go, did you ever get the Battlestar Galactica DVDs?
I did get season one. We just haven't got a chance to get started to it yet. My wife and I's schedule have been pretty busy. I think I've got 5 episodes of the Lie to Me series that we're trying to watch, and if I can finish that up this weekend, then we'll move on to Battlestar.
Yeah, it's kind of gloomy, but it's actually very well written. I think you'll like it, and I think it's season 3. You'll really enjoy one of the episodes because your buddy Paul Lazenby, he gets his ass kicked in one of the scenes. He actually does an awesome job of just taking this beating. It's like I'm sure you're going to mark out when you see it.
Yeah, it should be good. Yeah, we picked up season 1 on Blu-ray, so we'll be checking that out probably in the next few weeks.
Cool. Well, Lance, we really appreciate you coming on, spending so much time with us, especially because you weren't considering you weren't feeling so well a little earlier. But we really want to thank you for your time and doing the show.
All right, take it easy, Ed, Couture, and Craig. Enjoy being on the show.
Thank you so much. By the way, you can check out Lance at stormwrestling.com and follow him on Twitter at the same.
Cool. All right, I missed the plug on the live feed, so let me get them out right here. Everyone, check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com, along with a lot of other shows. So check out angrymarks.com. You can also check out this show at blogtalkradio.com/Couture, and you can hear older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo, and you can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo, or Ed in San Antonio, and you can follow me on Twitter at Ed in San Antonio. So follow me on Twitter, retweet our shows, help out the show. We've been doing, and our listenership has like more than tripled in the last couple months. So appreciate everyone who listens. And anyone else got anything to plug?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter as well at properjam, P-R-O-P-E-R-J-A-M, J-A-M. And I'll be tweeting some live Eddie Vedder from this weekend.
Yeah, and don't forget that's proper jam.
yeah, proper jam, whatever. Anyway, follow me on there, and I'll be out with Matt Cleary on Monday and Tuesday night seeing Eddie Vedder in Houston. That's right.
It's too bad. I mean, I was actually honestly thinking about maybe just driving up just for lunch, but man, since you're doing it during the week, it's benefit.
Well,
yeah.
Not my fault.
It is your fault. But
no.
But I'm sure Matt will be more than happy to have you all to himself. I know he's your biggest fan.
Well, the feeling is mutual.
Yeah. They also made a cool last storm Photoshop. But do we have any other things we want to talk about before we go, Craig?
No, I think I just want to go watch Spider-Man.
This is a good movie.
Okay, Contrere, any last thoughts or topics?
I wanted to plug my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Contrere. Yeah, I just put up some old Memphis from like the mid-80s up there today, so. There's about 30 or 40 videos up there, Memphis Wrestling. A bunch of other stuff up there, too. I have a Facebook. I don't want to be your friend, so don't go to it. I have a friend from work coming over, and we're going to watch some exploitation films.
I see.
I got Hobo with a shotgun and Nude Nuns with big guns. We're going to watch those. Excellent.
Cool. And I may have to use your YouTube channel to post my video of my scene so I win the contest next week.
Oh, gosh.
All you got to do is sign up for YouTube. It don't cost you nothing.
It's complicated.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it. But anyway, I haven't decided. I might be seeing some Jim Croce, or I could be doing some George Strait, or I could even be doing I forgot his name, but it's that old dude who sings. Brian played his songs a couple times. Marty Robbins, Old Town of El Paso. So, huh. Trying to decide.
You know, I might have entered a contest like this if there wasn't a video, because I'm not singing on the video. Sorry. You know.
I think I'm going to grab my guitar and do a little Mark Lanegan or Screaming Trees. see what I can come up with.
I came up with the perfect slogan for you, Craig, if you would run for president.
What's that?
You can't spell prosperity without proper.
Ooh.
It's proper.
I got to write that down. Somebody asked.
Do you think you and Britt as running mates would have beat Brian or even maybe even Granny?
Yeah, somebody on the board posted if I would have ran and picked Brent Crimmin as my running mate, if I would have won that whole thing, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Then you go back to if the president goes down, who's going to be in charge? You got a cat, you got Anchor, you got a dude on medication that's been institutionalized a couple of times. You got Lance Storm, who's like the nicest guy in the world.
Right.
Yeah, but Lance is Canadian.
Well, then why did she run with him?
Granny should have picked me. She would have won. Moving case closed. You know,
why do you always run that country?
Marijuana be legal in every state, and I just watched it in Denver. Right.
Even though I got harassed via PM by her last week.
I thought you were joking, but then I was like, I bet he did. She did send him a PM. And we're probably going to get another one because she said she listens to the show and doesn't like when we talk about her. So I blame that on you.
Granny. I just respectfully disagree with a lot of what she says. She just said, well, back when they didn't have all these diseases and drugs, and the lifestyle back then is why we have all these diseases and drugs. You know, that's why things are like they are now.
Now, do you think she responded from something you said on the board, or do you think she heard the show and sent you a PM?
Something on the board, because it was to argue against the way things were back then and the way now is just, there's no argument. It'd be embarrassing to argue about. So that's what the whole deal was. Plus, I always get antsy when I get private messages on like that. I don't like people on the board contacting me in private. Weird.
I remember the first PM I ever got on the board was actually from your ass.
Yeah, because I was, I'm pretty sure that's the guy from IATA, so, in San Antonio. So I PM'd him and then welcomed him to the board. And 2 weeks later, he was.
Yeah, I didn't see it for 2 weeks. I didn't know how it worked. But I can hear Craig get it antsy, so I'll go ahead and wrap up the show.
Yeah, I'm not getting antsy. I was reading the comments on the board, and Haphazard used Christ's name in vain and said, get this caller off the line. Matt wrote, wow, Lance is a saint. Contrere, we found out where he was. Call was so painful, I had to take a break and smoke. Matt wrote, I drank two beers.
The reason I let him stay on a little longer than I probably should have is because I was actually laughing on the inside of how.
Yes, me too. And I was imagining Lance's face and the eye roll and the heavy sigh and the, yeah, anyway.
Yeah. But I think we do appreciate him listening to the show.
Oh, he's not going to download this. He's listening live.
Sometimes
we'll find
you calls that are so awkward that you just got to break away from everything and you just got to take your headphones out and go for a walk. You know,
dude, just go. I'm go
sure
find
I
a wrestling school.
Sure the number was off the screen, so yeah.
Go find a wrestling school, and if they don't kick you out, you might have a shot.
Craig, do you have anything lined up for next week? Because since this is like the big GSP fight, I could try and get a Lazenby on the show.
Yeah, I'm so scatterbrained because I'm leaving on vacation. Just do that.
Okay, I'll see if he has the time. He might be busy since it's in Canada and everything. But if it works, it's the worst. We'll try and get paused now. We'll just come up with something for next week. So everybody come back next week, and we will talk to everybody then.
Be the man. You gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the American shit. Let's go, hook him up.
Oh, hand on a K-4. Enough! What's up? He's broken up. said 316, cause I just whipped your ass. I want to dog you until I wear your Texas ass out.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.